Hi, it's Dave. Welcome to my 201st episode of my show. Today I'm joined with Emmett Peppers again, and I wanted to bring him on because I love chatting about investments, philosophies, Tesla, and yeah, and especially the S&P 500 inclusion that's coming up.
Yes.
So yeah, we're going to go ahead and I want to kind of get the latest update on Tesla, the stock price, but also I want to dive into some deeper kind of thinking on investing and trying to really pry and push each other. And I want to challenge, you know, Emmett, and Emmett's going to challenge me on our thinking on investing. So first I want to welcome you, Emmett. Thanks.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Glad to be on your 201st episode.
Awesome. Yeah. Welcome. Yeah. So Tesla has skyrocketed. I think it closed, what, at 585 or so?
Yep. Yes.
Yeah, it's crazy. And your trade, right, your $2.7 million trade has gone up. Is it probably a 4X or almost over
4? I think it's 4 or 5X now. Yeah. It's pretty in between there maybe, but it's pretty crazy how fast it's gone up, you know. I put a tweet out there going into the weekend. It's been my most popular tweet I've ever put out. I just start thinking about it, and I can't imagine 120 million shares of Tesla bull shareholders. I mean, the vast majority of that would be Tesla bulls. I would imagine there's not 120 million of short-term speculators. You know, that would be a small percentage of that, in my opinion. So I can't imagine that many Tesla bulls selling on the eve of this historic quarter and 2021 guidance, which will be historic, and these new factories coming out and Cybertruck then, you know, just so many great things coming. And I just can't imagine them all selling to the index funds. And that's not even counting the benchmark funds that want to buy now. So it just felt like the conviction is still there that the could appreciate significantly still. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then I saw the responses because, you know, got so many likes and retweets, and I saw the responses, and it was a mix, you know, half the people, or, you know, 2/3 of the people, because I'm in the Twitter tribe of Tesla basically. And so 2/3 of the responses were naturally like, yeah, hold on. But then there was still like 1/3 of responses of people like doubting it, like saying, mm-hmm. yeah. And, you know, I don't think it's going to drop any day now. And that made me feel better that there was a mix that, mm-hmm. you know, if it was every single person was like, it's going to the moon, then I might start thinking, well, the sentiment's so high, how can it get higher? Mm-hmm. But because it's still mixed, I think that's a good sign to me, mm-hmm. a little bit.
Got it. I remember I'm putting this tweet up on the screen right now. It's a Gary Black says, I hate to throw cold water on what's been a great party, but the big risk is traders buying up Tesla shares, hoping to flip them to indexers. When Tesla joins S&P 500 on December 21st, they buy too many. Indexers only need 120 million shares, 16% of the float, but Tesla's up 43% in 2 weeks, caution advised. And you said it could be a risk, but I mean, what's your take on kind of this risk of traders buying up too many shares, right, and flipping them to the indexer, so around the inclusion day, you know, it starts to go down?
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly a risk. That's the main risk here. And but I still can't fathom 120 million plus shares of that. You know, I mean, that's a lot of money. That's like $70 billion worth right now. I mean, that's a lot of speculators, you know, to add up to do that. And it's possible, but for every, you know, I think if you had two speculators bidding the price up further right now, ready to sell, well, then you'd have, you know, if they were selling, you'd probably still have another one or two speculators wet, ready to get back in on a dip, you know. And so it would almost net itself out, I think, to some degree, even if that was a huge factor, you know. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think this early price movement is a great indication of what's to come. Having said that, none of this is investment advice. It's just my own hopeful thinking, you know, it's played out the way I envisioned so far, but it could certainly backtrack for so many unknown reasons I can't think of.
Yeah. I mean, I need to emphasize it once again. This is not investment advice, financial advice, you know, consult someone else. I mean, you're a professional or whatever. We're just sharing our personal opinions. Several people have commented asking like, A, is Tesla possibly going to do a cap raise, like a stock offering, to take advantage of this like kind of high price? Like Elon Musk even like replied to someone saying, wow, you know, with the stock price. And so he's kind of like, whoa, this is pretty high. So will Elon pull a move and say, tell his, IR team and finance team says, hey, I want to raise some money. And then will that just kind of pull the air out of this move, Will people just like take a step back? Like, is that a risk? And what are you thinking about that?
It's possible, but I think it's unlikely. I think they raised $5 billion in September, early September, around the time maybe they thought that the S&P was going to announce inclusion, and maybe they had that in the works to raise this, and then maybe they didn't get indication. They're just like, I'm just going to raise it anyway. Who knows what that was? No, they never even fully explained why they raised it, right? I think it might have had something to do with their expectation of S&P inclusion, but that never happened. So maybe Elon's bitter, or maybe not. Maybe that was for some other reason they just never disclosed, right? But also, I think you and I both agree they have enough cash on hand to fund all the growth they need going forward, unless there's some unexplained major projects they want to do. So I think they have enough cash on hand, and Elon even tweeted some quote from the Vanguard founder. I forget the guy's name, but it was basically the way I interpreted it was, he said something like, "There's lots of other great stocks out there," and then he quoted this guy. And the way I interpreted it was that he's not planning to do a raise, and maybe he will. But even if they do a raise, like, what are they going to raise? 50 billion? They might raise like 5 billion again, but that's just like 10% of, or less than that, of what, it's still not going to put a dent in the amount the whole index would. What I think a lot of people don't seem to get, even after we talked last time about it, and I know a lot of people watch that, still so many people don't get that this is a different kind of catalyst, right? This is a catalyst for the share price, not for sentiment of the company. I mean, sure, there's a sentiment of the company catalyst here. S&P inclusion, it's great. It's a new era, but this is an actual share price catalyst. Like, 120 million shares plus have to be bought, like taken out of circulation, some people say, which is, the right way to think of it. So this isn't just like a sentiment change, like, oh, great quarter deliveries. Oh, battery day is amazing in the future. And then people speculate on that. Institutions speculate on that. Retail people speculate on that, buying more. This is not that. This is orders from the S&P committee that Tesla is in the index, and it's going to have a 1.3% weighting or whatever it is, which means, 60 or 70 billion at this current level has to be bought, which is a lot of money of Tesla. And the market cap being, what is it, 510 billion or something now? Is that about right? Something like that.
Maybe
So,
higher, actually.
yeah. And I see some people throwing numbers around like, oh, 50 billion has to be bought. That means this market cap might go up to 560 billion instead of five. That's not true at all. Like, the liquidity is not there. Like, people don't want to sell. Like, talk about Bitcoin, for example, right? That's market cap is 250 billion or something, or 300 billion maybe.
300 something,
And
yeah.
yeah. And if someone comes in with 1 billion sell order, that's going to tank the Bitcoin price real fast to like a 200 billion market cap suddenly, so it's going to take out 100 billion of market cap valuation real quickly just for like a 1 or 2 billion sell order of Bitcoin, in my opinion, because it's not as liquid. So many people own the Bitcoin, but they're not offering it up to sell at any given time, right? So I think something similar is going to happen with Tesla here, with this squeeze potential, where so many funds have to buy it, and there's just not liquidity to sell. And yeah, you have market makers and some proprietary desks of investment banks or special, situation hedge fund strategies trying to do something to provide liquidity to make money on it somehow. But it's just going to mark the price up faster and faster, I think, as we go higher.
Got it. I think, is it Monday that the S&P 500 announces like if they're gonna have one tranche or two tranches for the inclusion?
End of day, I think Monday is supposed. That'll be interesting to see how the market reacts to that, and the next day, and what they announce. But that's also a tell, is, they get to cover their butts if the market is going to go up so much. Then they can say, well, we got investment advice to do it this way, and what if we did it another way? It might not have been such a problem for the share price going up, but we'll never know. But yeah, so it
Like
covers them.
my thing is like it seems like the S&P 500 kind of like I don't know what they were thinking giving like traders all this opportunity just to
Yeah.
bid up the price, so
Yeah.
indexers have to pay this like in more inflated price. It's like, what are they thinking? It's just like, yeah, if you give them maybe a shorter period of time, then the traders don't have enough time, perhaps, indexers buy it. But now it's like, the index funds are at a disadvantage in a sense. They have to buy at whatever price, but at an inflated price, because the S&P 500 gave like 2 weeks or 3 weeks or even whatever, to bid up the price. It's kind of
Yeah.
crazy.
Crazy. It's a
Yeah.
historic like thing, right? It's just, I think there'll be case studies written about Tesla and this particular S&P inclusion for ages to come.
All right, so I want to talk to you about this one tweet that you tweeted, and it's about how you try to take advantage of certain type of narratives or scenarios. All right, so here's a tweet. It says, some are good at A, crafting and creating research stories and narratives, while others are good at B, verifying veracity and taking action off of A. It's rare to be good at both, as each tap into a different desire of human nature, more status with A and more wealth with B. For myself, I realize it's a good idea to pick one to focus on. Can you explain kind of this tweet and what you're talking about?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. I just had seen, I have this fund and I'm on this emerging manager platform called like Sum Zero, and I'm getting my fund up there, and I'm competing with visibility from other funds, right? And there's one of the things you do is you put up your own research on this platform, and I put out, a research article about the S&P 500 inclusion, similar to what we've been talking about and how this trade could be a good short-term opportunity. And it wasn't like that fancy. It was like 1,000 words. I didn't have any graphs or charts, and it was pretty succinct. I proofread it, and I thought it got the story across, right? But it's not like a real like professional story told, And then I look at the research from some of these other hedge fund managers on there, and like the popular ones, and they have these much more long, like drawn out research articles that with like all kinds of graphs and charts, like trying to illustrate their case, trying to convince and persuade the people reading it like that their idea is the correct idea and this is why this is going to happen. But I feel like some of these people are very good at putting out research, but their returns, not so good, and I'm like, man, how is it that some people are so good at putting out this like research, this narrative about things, but their decisions are so bad, right? And it's because a lot of what they say is, they craft it well. They're good at crafting a story or a narrative, but it's just not true. Maybe they get it in their head or whatever it is, but I just feel like it's a whole different ball game to figure out what's true and what's not true. And not that my S&P 500 inclusion idea was like a true thing for sure, but I was putting it out as like, hey, I think there's like a 20% chance this could really run up and be a very profitable trade, and I was just to the fact. And but these other people, and I've seen this a lot in the hedge fund industry, especially, or just like on Seeking Alpha or wherever you go, you see people kind of practicing their craft of telling these stories in the finance world with research, right? And most people don't beat the market. Right? Why is that, right? And most people can't beat the market, and I think they just can't figure out what's true and what's not. Yet they create these interesting ideas that people somehow gravitate towards, and then they can't decide whether it's true or not, a lot of people, and but they still might act on it, for example. So I've decided I'd rather focus on being able to decide what's true and what's not true so I can act on it and reap the benefits. So that's sort of what that genesis of that was. And you see it in all different walks of life, not just investing, but that's just an example with the investing.
Like I'm curious because like I think one theme is kind of this taking action, right? Actually, like if you know something is true or is likely or has some great possibility for some outsized gains, the like some people like they don't take action or they don't know how to take action, right? But then there's this thing of like A, working out the numbers, it's kind of it could be wise to take action, let's say at a reasonable amount, right, for the potential of your trade. The other kind of theme, though, is this idea of how do you discern what's true and what's not, right? So you have this fancy story of this, potential really speculative stock that's going to shoot, supposedly shoot to the moon, and like, what do you, how do you digest it? How do you, take it apart? What's your take?
Yeah, I mean, the first thing is you have to be skeptical of everything someone's saying. Someone's just trying to sell their story. We're all salesmen in some way or another, especially in finance. And so you have to be just naturally skeptical. And I look to their performance first. Like, what's their track record? Do they have a great return? Have they done well? If they've made a lot of mistakes in the past, then their track record's not good, right? And so that's what I would look at, is just the performance. And no matter how good the story looks, if they haven't walked the walk and su successfully, then their talk is nonsense to me, most likely. It doesn't mean it's wrong, but it just means, like, it's almost like a coin flip. I don't know whether to believe it or not. Like, I really have to just research it myself more.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, sometimes performance can like be a little tricky though, because sometimes people could have some great performance before
They can
this
get
like,
lucky.
yeah, this massive failure, like back in the
It's
day of
true.
early Tesla kind of investors in Tesla Motors Club, there was a big group of people who got early success, but then they just like went off on this kind of really speculative stock called GTAT.
I
And
remember that.
yeah,
Yeah.
it
I was
just.
almost bought into that at one point. Like, I was luckily the skeptical side of me was like, I don't know if I believe this. I'm not going to do it. But yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, I mean, like it swayed like a ton of people. They put a ton of money into it. A lot of people lost their entire savings. I mean, this company supposedly they were, gonna supply Apple with sapphire glass or something, and it never worked out, and the company went belly up. So yeah, I mean, like for me, I looked at that and I just like. I had it was like BS indicator all over the place, because I was looking at the management and I was like, what were their past promises in the past, and did they follow through with their promises, right? So I was looking back a few years before that, like what they were promising on doing a couple years later, and they weren't following through. It was just excuse after excuse, right? That's what their quarterly reports and annual reports were all about. And I'm like, man, these guys just don't know how to execute, But I mean, what I realized is I mean, as I reflected on your tweet, what I started to think was a lot of times, like for example, there's all these conspiracy theories going on. Like, so this past week, I was contacted by some people who are like, Stripe is going public with this SPAC, right? By Bill Ackman, and they're convinced, like 100%, right? And I've heard this throughout the months. Like people have been DMing me on Twitter saying, "This is all. Look at all these clues," right? And I look at this and I'm like, I think part of it is like, personally, I put the chances close to zero that Stripe goes IPO via SPAC. And what the reasons are, it's hard to say it's just one thing, because it's actually a myriad of like dozens and dozens of things. Like, and like one example is like, I've been following the Stripe founders for like since the very beginning, like since they started the company. I've been following Stripe. I understand their values. I understand like the cash position of Stripe. I understand the Stripe's position in the secondary market. Like they're actually more sought after than SpaceX, actually, in the secondary market. Like it's hard to get their shares. This is one company that they can snap their finger and they can get as much money as they want. Like they're the top, secondary market company. And the founders are the most long-term thinking founders like out there, basically. And there's absolutely no reason to go public with the SPAC, because the benefit of SPAC is first you go public faster, but these guys don't even want to go public, and second, yeah. And it's like, and it makes all the sense for Stripe to go public when they want on their own terms without giving equity or all this stuff to this extra entity and add complexity. But a bunch of people are just so convinced it's going to happen because they piece together some clues and they've got this whole thing and they're betting all this money on it, and now they want it to succeed. And I'm thinking like it could happen, but I mean, I'm just putting a super low chance and this is my personal opinion. But I think a lot of times it's the lack of breadth. It's like there's something multidisciplinary about investing where it's not just about numbers, it's not just about the product, it's not just about management. It's like about a lot of things, And sometimes you also have to listen to the management and see, are these guys like truthful? Are these guys like legit or not? I think people underestimate, they think of investing as just trying to t make a trade, try to make some money. And when they are so narrow focused and they come into investing without a multidisciplinary background, I think they're more susceptible to these conspiracy theories. I mean, what are your thoughts?
No, I agree. I think people like to put stories together, or they like stories that sound good, and that sounds like a good story. Like, hey, the SPACs are big. Bill Ackman, he's a big player. He's courting them. It just fits, and they have the story and they just click it in their head and it seems right, But like you said, I think you got to really do the digging. And if Dave Lee is saying he's been looking into them, you better believe Dave Lee knows everything about Stripe as much as anyone. And if
But I
you're,
don't know
if,
that much, but still.
well, even you saying you don't know that much to me is like, man, Dave knows a ton about, you speed read books and all, like, a lot more than 99% of people looking at Stripe, I think, and I think for you to kind of not even think it's likely or close to likely, speaks a lot stronger to me, just because I know how right you have been on many things. Not that you're always right on things, but you're careful and you do a ton of research. But like you said, a lot of people don't do a ton of research. They just kind of put a story together in their head that just sounds good or fits nicely to what they want or what someone told them, and they just go with that, and it just doesn't work out always that way.
It's interesting because like with this whole S&P 500, let's say it's a narrative in a sense, right? That Tesla joins S&P 500, and in some ways, like maybe there are some people better than you in crafting the narrative, looking at the statistics. But you're saying like in a sense, maybe your specialty is acting or verifying, the validity or truthfulness of the narrative and then taking action on that, like how did you do that with S&P 500? Kind of, I mean, there are various people putting out, statistics and numbers, et cetera, but what was going through your mind in testing the veracity?
I mean, I think there was people that sort of thought that that the S&P 500 was going to be big. No one seemed to really be strongly predicting it was going to be a huge run up to like 700 plus. People thought like, oh, 15% rise, great. That would go to like 550 maybe or something, but I just thought like this is, based on the supply and demand of the shares out there. And I've seen some people on Twitter in the past, like, I think I mentioned them in some of my tweets, Frank Peeling and Tesla Truth and this other guy, Reflex Funds, those guys have all put out, and there's a lot of Tesla Motors Club forum people. And when I read all those people's proposals, like I'm not researching it myself necessarily. I put a, I, one time I said like, what I believe is it's not necessarily good to be the smartest person in the room on a niche. Like you want to be able to identify who the smartest people are in the room, right? And so you got to listen to a lot of different people and be able to figure out who's really the smartest in the room on a particular topic. And so on the particular topic of S&P 500 inclusion, I feel like I've seen a whole bunch of different research theses on it, and I've been able to figure out what I think is the most accurate. They're not my ideas. They're just ideas I see from other people that I think is most accurate. And I've put it together, and I just felt by synthesizing all of it that it made the most sense that there's just a big supply and demand imbalance, and the shares are just going to skyrocket, when the S&P inclusion happens. And so we've been waiting for that for a year, like you and I, we've talked about it back and forth, and we've seen people put out research notes on it. And the research notes that are so bullish on it just make the most sense to me. And I try to counter that with my own, enthusiasm for Tesla, but I just don't see how they're not true. I just can't poke holes in them enough to where they're not true. Like there can't be that many speculators. Tesla is a ginormous market cap company now. It's like even more true now that Tesla has gone to the meteoric rise it's gotten since the split, So anyway, that's sort of how I've put it together. And I just felt most conviction not to like put the 5 or 10% of my equity into that bet.
Definitely. I have some user or viewer questions that I wanted to just toss out. First question is, some folks are asking, like, are there any courses for, let's say, for options or trading that you would recommend? Do you have any in mind?
I mean, I think there's a ton of great YouTube courses, probably. Like where I worked at was Interactive Brokers, and they had a huge education curriculum. So I'd go start with someone like that, like someone form like Interactive Brokers. They put out really good basic options tutorial courses and more advanced option courses, versus like a homegrown YouTube video. You could certainly pick a YouTube video, but I think if you go to like interactivebrokers.com, go to their education section, there's tons of free online courses, and they're, I think they call it their Traders Academy, and you could use it for free. And I think Ameritrade has something similar probably. So I would think one of those big brokers, free education sources is a good way to start.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, do you think these courses really like teach you much beyond just like the very, very basics?
I think they teach you the basics, but you need to know the basics before you try to do anything with options, right? So the basics is, you know, what's a call option, what's a put option, and then you can do much more fancy things with spreads or volatility trading. They call it like delta hedging and do vol trading. You know, some people do some crazy things, but I don't think, you know, that's all beyond me. I don't want to do that. I want to just buy calls or maybe sell covered calls one day. I haven't really gone there yet with Tesla, but yeah. I buy puts on the index if I think the market's going to crash, or, you know, I've only done that a couple times, but, you know, I try to be simple with my options. But once you understand the basics of what a put and a call is and the time to expiry, and then there's tools you can use where you can price out what your option would be worth at X time if you think the price will be worth, if you think the price of the stock will be X time. You know what I find amazing is how many people I talk to don't even know what like market capitalization is. You know, some people just think, like, you'd be amazed how many people look at stock prices and just think, oh, Tesla $585 versus Ford at $20 or whatever it is. They're like, oh, Ford's so much cheaper. You know, they don't understand market caps, right? And it's just amazing just that alone, how people don't understand. So I think people need to understand the basics of options before they kind of even think about using them.
That's true. I'm kind of like, I think, yeah, courses and books, I would suggest just like, you know, buying just some books on options, and just on Amazon, and, you know, and that's where I think reading fast helps, because you could quickly go through it. But, you know, if you buy the top five or 10 books on options trading, you'll get the basics. But then to me, that has like somewhat limited value, because it's like, so what do you do with that? Right. And the next step most people and courses will take you on is kind of like this whole, either day trading option like route, or kind of more of this like, you know, trading options for income. It's kind of like, I look at it as more like working. It's like you're creating a full-time job for yourself, right? You're doing all these hedges, like, you know, pinching the pennies on this side, selling options on this side, trying to be a market maker, but, you know, tracking all of your trades every day. I went through a period of a couple of years where I was just like, kind of like diving into all of these different kind of top option thinkers and traders and day traders. And so I actually like reading their stuff, and I was like going through their courses. I went to some of their conference. I went to these like trading conferences, right? And option conferences where you had like the world's best, like you have these like the world's best day trader, you know, going at it, et cetera. And I was going, I was listening to these guys speak and meeting them, and, you know, going through some of these courses and all their stuff. And I started to think, I mean, a little skeptical. I mean, I might sound a little jaded, but this is just my personal experience. What I realized is a lot of these guys, they're making more money off of their courses than they are trading. It's like, I'm like, what's going on? And like, and then there's just like, supposedly I was listening to this world's greatest, you know, day trader. He's won all these world contests on day trading. So I'm like, wow, man, you should be able to make like millions, right? Every year and stuff, right? But he actually doesn't. He actually makes a lot more money off of trading his or selling his courses, right?
Yeah.
And I'm like, what's going on? And for all of these people, they all hit the same roadblock. And what it is the more money that they try to use, it kind of, their system doesn't really work for it, because like the whole key is you have to risk you can't risk a lot with each trade. You have to risk just a tiny bit, because your trade could go wrong. Like, you don't have a great, you know, percent of success. So you risk a little bit, and it's like, it becomes a job, you know, you just have to do this day in and day out just to make a six-figure living. If you're lucky, you know, it'd be 7, but with courses, you'll make a lot more, you know, than that. In some ways, like, that's where I'm like, the typical day trading route or the typical options type of like, you know, complicated type of hedges and, you know, all these like options for income, you know. They seem to be kind of a bit of a crowded field, a bit of a field where it's being monetized, you know, as this lure to kind of like draw people in. But the reality is it seems to be a little bit capped in some ways, where it's like you really have it. It's like your job, you know, and it's like, I don't know. I kind of question some of that stuff myself personally.
I agree. I mean, I think I've seen a lot of people go down that path, and some people seem to do really well selling, you know, calls or puts, you know, but then when the market, the, you know, the one in 10 years, the market goes haywire, they lose all their money, you know? And so you're kind of just like taking a chance a little bit every time, making a little bit of money, and eventually, you know, whatever the market goes against you in the way that you least thought was possible, but it does. And then you lose it all. And I see that, I've seen that happen several times. And my career at Interactive Brokers, just number of clients. And I think a lot of times people get drawn into selling like the option spreads, for example, for a little bit of income, like you said, because they do it like on a weekly basis or a monthly basis, and they're researching which ones to do, and they press the button to make the trade, and they feel like they're working to make money. And it feels like the sense of like, okay, I'm doing something to make money. And it's like more fulfilling or more believable to them that this is the right path, right? Just because they're doing something, you know, as opposed to like what I'm doing is I'm just like, place this one trade. I'm going to see how it plays out for a month or a month and a half. I'm not going to like start hedging it and do all different things to it. I mean, I might, but I'm not, that's not my plan, you know. Or long-term investors like us with Tesla, you buy Tesla, you hold it long, long-term, and we're not like trying to sell covered calls on it or trade in and out of it on ups and downs, you know, because we know the best value is more simple, right? Just to kind of sit on it and just wait it out, right? And that's not exciting to people. And so people, I think, veer away from that, and they don't believe it's as productive because they're just used to like a work life balance where they have to actually work to make money.
Yeah. Like the type of kind of like, I think options trades that you do in a sense, like it's a little bit unique, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if there's many courses that are going to be able to teach that, because
that's
I don't
true.
Think it's about the options per se. I think it's more about, it's about thinking and views on how you view the markets, you view psychology, you view valuations maybe. And it's, it's beyond the technicalities of, you know, the actual
traditional options.
Exactly.
Trading,
yeah. And that's why if you go to a course, you're just stuck with that, you know, and you're gonna be stuck
that's
into
true.
That boxed system. And I think most people will be frustrated actually.
Yeah. Maybe people should then back to like the recommendation, people should just learn what a call and what a put is and just stick to that and not go beyond that, where there's like extra lessons being taught about spreads and covered calls, and maybe covered calls, learn about that, or selling puts, learn about that too. But other than you know, what a call, like single leg option trades, start with that. And then if you had like, you know, let's say a $20,000 trading account, then dedicate like $2,000 just to some option trades you're going to do here and there, and experientially you'll learn a lot more.
Yeah, definitely. I've learned a lot throughout the years, you know, by losing a lot of money in different ways, but also gaining, you know, a lot of money through options. Like, I think overall, like taking smaller risks in the beginning makes sense, because like there's a lot of unknowns, and with options, things can go up and down very fast, you know? And it's better to learn with the smaller amounts, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Just start off small, and you know, it's like, it's sort of like sports betting in a way. It's, you know, that's why I'm sort of a gambler, but it's sort of like betting on sports in a way where you could just lose it all real easily if you're wrong. Yeah.
I want to go to another question is, a few people were asking like, hey, you know, could Emmett and also myself, can you guys just be an example? Are you guys just an example of survivorship bias? So in other words, you know, you guys got lucky in a sense, and you're basing your success off of what you might think like was important to that success, but maybe that wasn't really important. You're just a result of luck, right?
Yeah.
So over justifying or overemphasizing the reasons for your success, which might not be the reasons for your success. What's your kind of take on that?
Yeah, my take is it's very possible. You know, I'm not going to discount that. It's possible. Yeah. I mean, I could be very lucky. You know, time will tell, or, you know, I could continue to be very lucky and time won't tell, right? But the longer I have success, the less likely that's the case, in my opinion. And, you know, we'll see, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't think you can completely discount that. It's very possible. And no one really knows until history plays itself out, I guess, right? I mean, the stock Tesla could go to zero from some fraud stuff in a few months, like a lot of the bears have been saying. And then, yeah, sure, we're survivorship biased Tesla bulls. Like, so are a lot of people, right? So yeah. Anything's possible, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like I kind of take that question where I like to kind of poke and try to find the substance behind a person's thinking, behind their investments or behind their trade. Mm-hmm. And that will tell me a lot about the internal processes they go through on how they make that trade decision. So what I'm looking for is, I'm not really looking for per se how the trade will work out. I mean, that's interesting, but how are they thinking about their investment? Like, what are the risks and rewards, and how are they viewing like a myriad of things? Because with investing, there's so many facets, you know, there's so many angles. Like, as much as, like, for example, I talk about investing or even Tesla or other companies here, it's like, because there's so many angles, I could actually go on for like hundreds and or thousands of hours, because I'm only sharing like a small point something percent of what my thoughts are, you know, on mm-hmm. a company mm-hmm. like Tesla or investing. And what I like to do is I like to test that in other people. Like, okay, how deep is your thinking really? Are you really looking at 1,000 angles, right?
Yeah.
And if the person is really looking at like 1,000 angles, like, I give that person a bit more credit and respect for how they're approaching their investments. And I think they have a higher likelihood, if they're successful in their investments, to actually kind of reproduce that success. Because I think when you're looking at a 1,000 angles, you're in a way kind of potentially reducing the risk, because you're kind of, every angle you look at in a way is another angle that you're not blinded with in a way. And so that's where I'm kind of like, I see survivorship bias a lot in fields where the people aren't tested. Like, you know, you don't really test if they're looking at things from 1,000 angles. But otherwise, I mean, there's always luck is always a part of it. I mean, every Tesla investor is lucky, you know? I mean, it's like, who expected? I mean, maybe there's a few that expected, but it's just, there's so much, you know, luck and fortune involved as well. Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely. And I mean, the market itself right now is at a great time with interest rates, record lows for so long, and it's perfect storm for Tesla to just rise very appreciably, especially with all the shorts bailing out in those last year. And, you know, now the S&P inclusion. So it's just a perfect setup and storm for us Tesla investors to really reap some major benefits. You're right. I mean, but these are all angles that sort of you and I think a lot of investors, long-term Tesla investors, have kind of had our eyes on. And we're lucky, we're happy that these things have materialized, because for many years we were kind of just like sitting in the shadows waiting. You know, since 2013 or 14, right? We've just been like, oh, when's this going to break out? It's just year after year, it's just the stock's not going where we think it should go. You know, are we victims of survivorship bias from 2012 to 2013, you know, or are we, you know, true and right, you know? And so we've been lucky to be right now. So, mm-hmm.
Yeah, definitely. So another question, this is kind of my own question here, is, I was thinking about the role of ambition in investing.
Yeah.
And it kind of seems like, you know, ambition does seem to play a role in kind of what type of risks or what type of, I guess, appreciation and, you know, growth that you're after, you know? And I think the greater the ambition, it turns, sometimes you want faster and greater returns, you know? And I think that in and of itself is not necessarily negative. I think that could be positive, right? Mm-hmm. But I think you need to pair it probably with a few things. And the two other things which I was thinking about pairing it with is, you pair high ambition with high skill. Like somehow you need some skill in kind of determining what you're doing. And then you also pair it with kind of small first initial steps where you don't take like kind of over outsized big steps or risk in the beginning. You know, you kind of build up those steps. So the high ambition is good, but if you don't have skill and you take too big, you know, steps in the beginning, it could blast you apart, you know? And I see this over and over. Like if you go to Reddit, like Wall Street Bets, it's like there was like a month or so I was looking at this stuff a few years ago. Now I can't look at it. I can't bear to look at it because there's so many just like sad stories, you know, of people losing their entire life savings. Like there's so much hope saying, oh my gosh, I'm gonna be a millionaire or whatever, you know, with my account. And then it's like most of the people there, and there are some that make it, but then there are so many people that are just like, oh my gosh, you know, I'm devastated, blah, blah, blah. And I look at it as like they have ambition, which is not necessarily bad. You know, I don't fault Wall Street Bets, you know, community for having that ambition. But you need the skill, and then you need to start with smaller steps to build up. And that's like kind of the secret sauce in a way. Like, I don't know, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, as you said that, it makes a lot of sense. I mean, I'm lucky that I had some small steps that failed early in my 20s, and yeah, I lost like a $8,000 Roth IRA account and turned into like zero on some, you know, over the counter stock my dad was big on, and I thought he was smart. You know, he was smart, but you know, it just didn't work out. So I had some fails early on, and at the time it was a lot to me, but I was able to rebuild my savings and get further in my career. And then in my job, I saw a lot of investors and day traders lose money. And so I could see firsthand how people, like use watching on Reddit or whatnot, lose their savings or lose a lot of money on things they seem so sure of, you know? And so it helps add to my skepticism for myself when I'm taking steps towards my ambitions of investing my assets further and such. So I think, yeah, you're right. There has to be some ambition there to move on to like the next level. But you have to do it in careful steps. Like you don't want to rush too far ahead where you know something hits you the wrong way and you just lose everything. You know, you have to just be careful and calculated. And you know, just like we were talking about with options, if someone's going to dabble in options, they should just portion out 10% of their portfolio only, you know, only just, you know, not nothing more to options, for example, just to start learning it. You know, some people might just otherwise, if you have a lot of ambition and you just rush forward and use your whole portfolio on options, you could lose your whole portfolio and not learn.
And take margin.
Yeah, and take margin.
It's
Yeah,
crazy.
margin's scary too. People take a lot of margin and get crushed with that too. Yeah, I mean, we're in this historic bull market, and you know, there could be another 50% correction in January for whatever reason, but no one expects it, you know, and everyone who's using margin now could get wiped out, right? So you just don't know when that's going to happen and just have to be prepared.
Another interesting kind of question or idea is, have you ever it's probably obviously probably yes for everyone who's traded, but have you ever just done a trade because you heard someone else was doing that trade and you didn't want to miss out and you trusted that person? Like, and then when did you stop doing that? You know, kind of just that, yeah.
Yeah, I have done that. And so that was just, there was that company, that over the counter stock company. I remember years ago in my Roth IRA, I put my whole, like it was called Foldera, Foldera. It was like this cloud, it was like an early cloud business for like, you know, office, you know, stuff like Excel spreadsheet. I don't know. It was interesting. It sounded interesting. I didn't know anything about it other than my dad liked it. I ended up putting a lot of my, and then United Airlines too, or before it went bankrupt even. And I lost it all. And I was like, man, I'm never going to do that again. I need to know what I'm investing in. And I learned that lesson, but I'm lucky I was in my early 20s when that happened and not in my early 40s like I am now, you know? So I recovered. And but yeah, have you done that? Have you had something like that
Yeah,
happen before?
I think I've done that enough times where it's like it's my body has learned that any investment decision is my responsibility. You know? It's like and the other thing I've learned is that most people don't really know what they're doing either. Like even the people who you think kind of know what they're doing, like they really also have a lot of doubts, and they might portray themselves to be like, hey, I know
yeah,
what
they're
I'm
good at the
doing.
narrative, they're good at the
Exactly.
storytelling, but they, if you look at their returns or their results, it's not really, it doesn't indicate that.
So I've learned over the years, like, how to parse and filter people in a sense. Like even for example, in your case, you know, like I hate giving you such a hard time on my
I love it.
interviews.
I like it. Beat me up. Some people give me good ego trips on whatever.
I'm
I need
countering
to,
that ego,
someone has to
you
beat
know.
me up.
Like even with what you're doing with your trades in the past year, et cetera, like I look at that and I'm not like, I look through it all in a sense. And I go like, you know, it seems that for, and a lot of people are like, oh my gosh, Emmett like knows exactly what he's doing. He's a master of all things, you know, like what is he doing next, right? And for me, I look at that and I go, yeah, like Emmett, he did have a lot of hunches and he did have like a lot of like ideas, you know, what things could ha could go. And amazingly, and like actually last interview, I didn't want to, I talked about you betting on the super moves, right? And I didn't want to actually like discount that because that's immensely difficult to bet on super moves. And you've had like a ton of success with a lot of super moves. And I think like people don't realize like in some ways, like I think your LLC you started at the beginning of the year was like 100,000 you put into it and you grew it to what, 8 million or something, or
It's actually 11 million.
11 million. Okay, so 100,000 to, let's say, 10 million just for the sake of rounding it. So, you know, you've.
And if Tesla was a zero, it would still be like 2.5 million. Even if
Okay.
Tesla was a zero, the whole, like, if all, that's the majority, my highest conviction name, the majority of it now.
Yeah.
But it's still done very well, even
Yeah,
without
you
Tesla.
did a bunch of other bets. You know, I think it was with Square and Peloton and a few others.
The
And
NASDAQ,
yeah,
yeah,
the Nasdaq,
BSDAQ.
QQQ, you know, writing it down. And so, I mean, to go from 100,000 to 10 million in an account, that's 100x,
Very
right?
lucky. Yeah, it's never gonna happen. It's not gonna happen
Like,
again. But it was just a very lucky, opportune. Not lucky. I say that too much. It's very opportunistic year I've been able to take advantage of.
So, I
But go
mean,
on.
so I don't want to discount the number of super moves you've done, and I don't want to discount the return because it's, you know, unheard of. I would say unheard of, but yeah, to do 100x in 10 years or 20 years is amazing, you know? Like, but to do 100x in 1 year, you know, that's like out of the world. But when I look at that, like, I'm not as perhaps impressed in some ways as maybe like, as probably some other people might be, because I'm more like, I understand the unsureness of it as well. I understand the doubts, and I
Very
understand,
unsure.
yeah, I understand the internal conflicts. You know, like you might come across as this cool, collected guy, you know,
No, there's a lot of doubt. There's a lot
like
of
on,
sleep lost at
yeah,
night.
like on this show, you're just like this cool Joe who's just like, you know, just whether it's like 5 million, 10 million drops or whatever, right? But I understand the realities where it's like there are moments and there are times where it's like, oh my gosh, I know I have no idea what I'm doing. Or it's like, I don't know what's going to happen at all. You know, I'm just completely in the dark and I'm just throwing the dart somewhere to go next because I have a sense it's in this direction. You know, like it goes ups and downs. Sometimes you have more clarity, and then sometimes that clarity gets all foggy and stuff. And so, like over the years, I've been able to, I guess, understand that there is like really like almost no superhuman in investing. You know, like as much as I might come across also on this channel as like, oh, I know what I'm doing with my philosophies and, you know, a framework and all this stuff, there's a lot of confusion too. You know, it's such a difficult thing to get right over and over, but not
It
just
is.
to get right with like 10 or 15 or 20% gains, but to get right on like extraordinary gains, you know, like 10xing, you know, gains in a reasonable amount of time. Like that's extraordinarily difficult. There is no superhuman on that. Whoever is acting like a superhuman is kind of faking it pretty much, you know, because it is intensely difficult. You know, it's intensely emotional, intensely draining. And, when you make it out to the other side, you are humbled by, you know, how so many things had to go right in your favor.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I think the past year, like I've had that incredible return in my fund account, and I know it's not going to be that good going forward. I'm like preparing to lose money next year. You know, like I'm preparing that I'm going to regress to the mean, and like lots of potential investors are reaching out to me, and I'm preparing to contact them all pretty soon just to give them the heads up. Like, listen, this is a very risky fund. I've done very well, but it's going to be very volatile, and it could very well lose a, you know, significant amount of money. And I'm preparing because my risky bets, like you said, I don't know what's going to happen for sure. I'm in the dark, really, and I'm just guessing, making that's I'm making my best like intuition bets on what's going on based on everything I'm learning. I don't know how things are going to turn out, and I could get cut in half next year. You know, it could certainly happen. I'm not going to get another, you know, 10x return for the year, 100x return.
Yeah.
You know, like, you know, I'll be lucky if I, you know, go up the, you know, 50% next year. In my opinion, I'll be very happy if that happened. But
Yeah.
you know, it's not like I'm realistic. Like you said, you have to be realistic on this. Like, none of us know for sure about the future. We're just
Yeah.
giving our best guesses based on all the information we have, and a lot of times that information is limited.
Yeah. Like the way I approach kind of, for example, chatting with you and trying to extract like value slash insight for myself. Like most all my interviews are just like personal. Like I interview because I want to interview and I want to learn. But what I like to do is like rather than taking it on a first level, saying, "Oh, Emmett did all these trades. Oh, how did you do 100x right in 1 year?" Like that's like basic level, right? A level down is kind of like, okay, so what are your what's your philosophy? What's your approach to investing, to money, to resources, to the markets? Like, how are you thinking like a deeper level down? You know, like what thoughts and values and approaches kind of formulate this, your actions that just happened this past year, right? A lot of people don't even like really focus on that. But then I think that's important. But I think what's even more important than that, which almost I think barely anyone will pry into, and that's what I do. Like I pry into this third level or deeper level, and I say, okay, so like, what is it about your not just your approach and values and thinking, but what is it like that what angle, what's a key insight that is allowing your brain and your psyche to kind of like spot these opportunities as something that's not just too risky, too crazy, but sees some of this stuff as like something to make a lot of profit on, and as evidenced with 100x, let's say, fund gain. Like there's something beneath even the approach, you know? There's something like a little bit
There's a
deeper.
mystery there.
Yeah, and it's something that is like, and it's something like, and this is kind of maybe a bit crazy, but I'm like, there's something like in your case, for a person who does, like I say, 100x in a year, where when you're going to sleep, like there's something that your brain is doing that's kind of synthesizing different thoughts together, you know? And it's allowing you to have a certain view on the world and also opportunities as well, right? And on a deeper level, like that's what I'm trying to understand a bit more, you know, because this other stuff, like you can learn and stuff, but the value gets less and less actually once you go up to the top. Like, oh, what trades did you do? You know, like
It's
whatever, all this
just
stuff. It's like this lower value than actually if you go down to maybe the fundamental kind of like key dynamic or key something that's going on. So, yeah, but that's why I
What
love
do you
like.
think it is? I don't even know what it is about me. What do you you've talked to me enough. Do you have any intuition or thought about what it is about? Do you think I'm, I mean, I'm obviously been very opportunistic this year and done well and, you know, lucky or whatever you want to call it. But what do you see something different? Like, I definitely am kind of a, I know I'm a weirdo and like have quirkiness about me in a lot of different aspects of my life, but what do you think it is with my thought process with investing? Do you have any ideas?
Yeah, like okay, so here's what I think. It's kind of
Okay, I want to hear.
crazy. So first, like I think you have a somewhat of a detachment to money. There's something where like typically people have more attachment. It means a lot more. I think for you, there's something about your relationship and view of money where it's more detached than normal. And it could be extremely detached, you know?
I would agree with that at this point. Yeah, I've
Yeah,
grown into that.
it's just it means something different, you know, than for a lot of people, it carries a lot of extra things. It carries security, it carries comfort, it carries future. It's intertwined with their survival in a sense, you know? And I don't think there's a way you could do what you're doing without certain level of detachment. Now, that detachment for some people actually can be very dangerous if they just go berserk with it. You know, some people just like, you know, go crazy with their money because they think they're not attached, but after they lose it all, then they're like but anyways, so you've got this detachment. And then second of all, you have a little bit, you have some of this like view of like odds and probabilities where a lot of people tend to be binary, where it's like either yes or no, you know? But I think you have something where you're viewing scenarios more as like this could happen, this could happen, this could happen, you know? And this scenario is like 20%, 30%, this is 30, 40%. Like you see things more blended and more, there's a deep another level. And this is the thing. Most people see it at this level. It's like yes or no, you know? Tesla up or down, whatever, right? There's another level where there's actually multiple scenarios, and each scenario carries like a different weighting, you know? So I think that actually comes like I don't know if if it was learned, but it seems like it's your default way of viewing things, you know? It's not something that you have to like force yourself to do. You just like naturally you see scenarios and probabilities and weightings. Like, is that kind of accurate in some
I'd
ways?
say that's very true. Yeah, it's true, not just in investing, but I notice it in like regular life situations. And yeah, it's
Exactly.
very true.
And another thing is you've got this a psychological type of insight where you look at kind of the psychology of people and the psychology of investors and markets, and you're able to piece together these things and how they impact certain kind of outcomes and stock prices or whatever. So you don't see the stock price for just stock price. Like you see it as like, oh, there's like people and things, like there's mechanisms,
Incentives.
exactly. And the different incentives, the different thinking. And so your mind is going to the psychology of what people are thinking, and you see kind of like the impact. You see this all the psychological, I guess, minds coming together, creating certain outcomes. And I think again, that's kind of quite natural for you as well. It's not something you have to like convince you ab about. You just see it like you see the scenario, but it's not, that's not the whole story. It's like, how did it get there? It's like there's lots of moving pieces, you know?
That's true. Yeah, I definitely, I think I put myself in other people's shoes a lot, and I feel like, okay, if I'm the CEO of this company, am I going to risk, my job for creating an EV, sacrificing the union jobs for this or that, so just things like that. Yeah, I definitely all the different actor, variables, the people that make the decisions, I try to figure out what their incentives are of
Yeah,
what they're going to act, how they're going to act, and put that
exactly.
together.
Yeah. And then still another kind of interesting angle is I think there's something about your view on gambling and kind of placing certain bets. Like you have this keen awareness that certain bets can be life-changing, can be like crazy. Like, and that's not necessary. It's not this distant thing for you. It's like a very close reality. Like you don't have to convince yourself that, oh, like a good bet can be a 10x or a 50x opportunity. Like it's partly experience and what you've seen over the years, but part of it also is like it kind of makes sense to you, you know,
It
that
does,
like
yeah.
that's
In a
how it is.
probabilistic point of view,
Exactly. It's just that's how it is, and there's always going to be those type of bets and those type of opportunities. Like other people mostly don't see that, you know?
I hope there's always going to be like part of me thinks this S&P thing is the last great opportunity like that, but I hope there's I'm going to be patient and wait for more, if people like investors were going to give my fund money, I was just thinking telling my strategic advisors working with me, like, you know, if some investors give me money, I might just hold a lot of it in cash for a while until it might be a while before I see the next big, you know, 10x possibility. Yeah. So yeah, I have seen some of these, but you don't know when they're going to come up. You know, when you see, sometimes they just hit you like a ton of bricks and you have to think about it. But I, you know, they don't, you can't, I just can't manufacture them. You know, I just can't. Yeah.
And like going back to our talk about like courses, right? And learning
Yeah.
options, like what options course is going to talk about detachment to money, you
Yeah.
know? Like viewing, you know, like blended scenarios and weighted, you know, possibilities and like psychology and all, of all the different players and outcomes and you know, the power of a big bet and all this stuff. Like this stuff isn't taught like in our typical investing or even trading or whatever education, financial education. And that to me is like, it's so interesting because isn't that the more valuable things that, you know, to
Think
teach?
so.
You know
Yeah,
what I'm
you would
saying?
think so.
Yeah. I mean, like think about it. If you were to teach your kids, you know, let's say investing or what you did, would you like want them to like go off to some course, you know, on some options trader, or would you really want them to learn these things, you know, like these
Yeah, no, I'd
core
want them to learn
principles?
these things.
Exactly, right? Like that's what births the actions and stuff. But our whole investing education system is like
It's messed up.
completely misses the point, you know?
Yeah. People talk about, like, you know, this is another thing I was thinking about is, you know, investing. People are like, oh, the PE should be this, or the valuation should be that. And instead of saying this is what it is this. It's not what it should be. It is this. And then you should reverse engineer why that is, you know. And I think too many people focus, especially shorts and Tesla, for example, they're like, Tesla should be valued at this, it should be valued at this, and they're focused on that instead of what is, you know, and they can't reverse engineer what is because they're just too tunnel visioned on what should be. And you know, we were talking before that we're gonna one day do a webinar on the history of the biggest shorts maybe in Tesla, way back to John Peterson or something.
Yeah, most people won't know who John Peterson
Yeah,
is,
most won't.
but
Yeah, that's like a 12, 12, 11, 13 kind of maybe back then.
yeah,
Yeah, that
yeah,
was the first big villain I remember. Yeah.
yeah, yeah, fun stuff. Yeah, like personally, like I think if you want to do traditional like kind of trading and work for, you know, your money like full time, all that stuff, yeah, I think there's a lot of courses and things to go to and stuff. But I personally think there's a way outside of the norm, outside of, I did this video today on what I call green pastures investing. And
Yeah, I saw
like,
that. It was good.
yeah, like people I think will generally take that as like, oh, it's just finding opportunity, right? But actually the key insight on that isn't really opportunity. It's more on the reality that most people, they will opt for comfort in the crowds. And they will oversaturate the opportunities closest to the city or closest to the crowds. And because of that, there will be outsized opportunities away from the crowds because the crowds are too scared to go there. You know, like that's actually more of the key insight on this green pastures kind of philosophy I was sharing. But in some ways, it's like, yeah, if you want to do the typical thing and, you know, do your whatever, you know, index fund trading or, you know, diversification, 60 stocks or something or whatever, like go for it and you'll find a lot of teachers, a lot of courses, you know, a lot of stuff. But in my opinion, it's like you're eating kind of a bit barren grass. Like it's overcrowded, you know, it's where everyone is already. And I think some of the stuff we're talking about, people aren't going to find a lot of resources or thinkers with it because it's outside of the city walls. That's outside of that. It's out in the rural, like way out in the, in some play, wild
Yeah,
place.
we're
You
in some crazy area.
exactly.
We're kind of we're like some nomads out in, you
Exactly.
know, forming our own little community, trying just barely, you know, we found great green pastures, but
Exactly.
who's following us there? You know, your listeners a little bit maybe, but yeah.
Yeah. I think in some ways, like people don't realize how out of the box some of the stuff is. You know, it really is like stuff that's it's non-traditional, you know. Like no one's gonna teach you how to do 100x in a year, you know? Like
That's unheard of. I mean, I can't really be, it's just, you know, It's not going to happen again. I know that. I mean, this was a special year with the ups and downs. You need a special year with those types of ups and downs. You need to be able to predict both of them at the right time.
I mean, for me, it's like I don't think the 100x in a year is the is like I think that's I mean, obviously it's amazing, but it's like even just 100x, like
At all.
at all, like you know, in 20 years, if you do 100x, that's amazing, you know. It's like mind-boggling. Yeah, it's like even just holding common stock, you know, like let's say with Tesla in 2012, my first shares
Now.
were $6. Now
Yeah.
it's close to
600.
600, and that's purely with common stock, you know. You don't have to have the risk of, you know, timing it per se. You
That
just
didn't take a lot of work. You just had to buy and hold and forget about it and believe in it. And it, like you just sit on your hands for 8 years or 9, whatever, it's hard to sit on your hands with all the news if you're following it and keep that conviction. But it's not like you had to go in and out of trades. But you got a 100x return for the simplest thing.
And traditional investing actually would say, you know, you can't really have an edge on picking a company because the market, everyone already knows everything, you know, this efficient market hypothesis. Therefore, you know, whatever you're doing, like, it's like has enormous risk, let's say with Tesla. So you don't put in a lot, you put in 1%. That's the, and you know, you have to do that much research because it's like, you know, you have so
And
many stocks, right?
the
Anyways.
worst is all the people that put let's say they put 10% of their portfolio in Tesla. Well, as it's grown and become like 30 or 40%, all their advisors or brokers or whoever's telling them like, oh, you shouldn't have so much Tesla, sell some of it, it's a winner. And they're selling off pieces and pieces all along the way. And now their portfolio is still 10% when it should have been 500% Tesla. So people get hurt on that type of, rule employed by the masses now,
I think on the flip side, though, I think a lot of people should take off some because they're not really analyzing the company deep enough. They don't really understand it deep enough. I
Maybe they
mean,
just followed someone else's advice instead of deciding for themselves. That's
And
absolutely
then some
true.
people actually have higher risk. Like if you're older, you know, if you're in your 50s, 60s, 70s, like some people actually I've seen take actually quite a big risk where I'm like, whoa, man, it's like, that's like, gotta
I've
watch what
seen
you're
that
doing.
too. I've seen some people like, I put my whole saving, I sold my house or I mortgaged my house and put it all. I've seen some of that. I mean, when you're young, maybe you can get away with that stuff, but when you're like in your 60s and 70s, people shouldn't be doing that.
I mean, that's where I'm like, if you go out to green pastures, there are some additional risks to leave the comfort of the city walls, etc. You there are robbers and thieves and bandits and lions and tigers, and like it requires, you know, you to up your skills, you know, to a certain level. And you can't just go out from the crowd thinking that you're gonna hit it big on some luck, you know, just like betting your whole life savings on some one thing, you know. It's like you've
The
gotta,
next Tesla or whatever.
you gotta back it up with a certain level of caution and skill and deep kind of insight and analysis. But
We've spent tens of thousands of hours working on Tesla, you and I, and over the years and experiencing the product, building our conviction that way, like we've talked about in previous discussions. And, if we didn't do that, then I think it would be silly for us to be invested so much in Tesla like we are.
What's interesting about also that is like, I mean, we really have done a lot. I mean, like there were years and many years where all I did was full-time Tesla writing, like back in 2013, 14, 15. Like I was just like 8 hours a day, just, you know, analyzing, writing all day and posting it right on Tesla Motors Club. But what's interesting is like, I never considered myself a Tesla expert, and like I still to this day don't consider myself a Tesla expert or even really like a expert Tesla analyst or anything like that, because I feel like that like everything is changing like continuously, week by week, day by day. Like it's fluctuating so fast, like so many factors that, like, sure, I have a decent grasp of the company and, you know, their financials and their growth and their products and management and all that. And I could talk about it for a very long time. Like I don't even need notes. I could just go off, you know, like on a 10-hour live stream or something on, you know, Tesla. But on some ways, there's so many things that like that I'm aware of that are changing and fluctuating. And Tesla's course is still like, you know, sure, some people are like, oh, it's like guaranteed, but I look at it as much more dynamic in that,
Fluid
yeah,
and just
exactly.
like It's always changing. I agree. It's like I think we're well informed to some degree, but you can't be a big expert on anyone who thinks they're an expert on all of Tesla. Like even some of the probably high up employees at Tesla don't understand the full breadth of what Tesla's doing. You know, maybe obviously Elon, I think, but there's just so many divisions within Tesla at this point. It's grown to such a point where it's like very hard to understand all of it. Like I think we talked about in the past, like we know the people who are the smartest on a certain niche, whether it's like the accounting metrics or, you know, battery technology, like the limiting factor you interviewed before. You know, there's certain people that are, you know, as close to experts as you can find on certain niches within Tesla. And if we can understand half of or 60 or 70% of what they're saying, then that's the best we can do, but it's impossible to like understand all of it.
Yeah. Emmett, it was fun talking with you again.
Yeah, great.
Yeah, I want to
Always I'm
dive into
happy.
this like idea of veracity, testing the veracity of things. Like there's something there that I think is pretty deep. Yeah, I've got some thoughts as well, but maybe for another episode. But
Yeah.
yeah, anyways, I'll leave Emmett's Twitter in the video description and his website. And I'll also link to Emmett's past videos on my site. Yeah, I think they're just a great series to kind of learn via conversation, you know, and learn via like osmosis, right, of some
Yeah,
principles and
and
thinking.
I think a lot of people enjoy the I think it's cool that it's coming out this way that there's this S&P inclusion event going on and I put this trade on. You know, it's kind of fun reality series for people to check in and see
Yeah.
how, you know, next time we chat I could be down big and be like, oh no, I lost all of it. Who knows? So it's gonna be
Exactly.
fun to put that video together one day.
Actually, that's one of the reasons why I'm comfortable doing it with you, because I know if like the trade turns bad,
I'm still fine. Yeah,
you're fine,
I expect it to
and
be a realistic possibility.
you're fine with sharing about it, and you know you have a good attitude about everything.
Yeah,
So yeah.
thanks.
All right, man. Take care, and yeah, we'll talk to you soon.
All right, sounds good, Dave. Talk to you.
Okay. All right. Bye.
All right, bye.